Hi, everybody. I would like to hide right now. Really. I was quickly sitting there and leafing through the book to find some ideas to talk about, because I have a not just absolutely blank today, even though since I've committed to speaking maybe 3 weeks ago, the speech has been writing itself in my head, and things that have come through since that moment when I said I would like to speak at the next speaker meeting, and that was accepted, a lot of things started to happen really quickly, and as if the recovery took a completely different turn for me. And I got that the recovery wasn't just about me. It wasn't about me, that something kept saying to me, there was one part of me that said, that critical parent that would say, show up and look good and impress everybody and make it worthwhile for them, make the worth the trip and being here to actually get something from my saying whatever I was going to say. And I knew that wasn't it. It wasn't about coming here and impressing you about anything. I've done that already my entire life, and it did not work. And about 15 months ago, I did hit the bottom. My bottom was being completely broke, which emulated my parents' behavior very well and very precisely. And I think I was out of food for quite a while, and I did not ask for help. And I was living in Santa Barbara. And all I could think about was, okay, by the weekend, if nothing changes, I'm out of here. There's no point of living a life that I've been living. It just was not possible for me to continue. I didn't want to do that anymore. And I knew I was alone, and it was sad. I had lots of friends, but I didn't feel that I was close with anyone. And that included God. So, let me back up a little bit. I was born in Poland in 1964 to parents that struggled in their 20s through the World War II. And they were quite educated in agriculture, and so they had, I think, master's degree. And they were very intelligent people, but not intelligent in the sense of living a good life. They had absolutely no skills whatsoever how to create a family and raise their kids and live a respectful existence and a happy existence, much nevertheless. So there were already seven children before me. I was the last of eight. And I think I was very much an afterthought. There were 9 years difference between my youngest sibling and me, and my parents were already in their mid to late 40s, and we were in communist Poland in the early 60s. So it wasn't only that my father was drinking and abusing verbally and emotionally my mother while the little children were growing up. They also had a farm, and they had animals, they had a bunch of land, and they just couldn't handle it. They had, there was no way that they could possibly make it work. So I was born into a, how would you say, a climate of overwhelm. They borrowed a bunch of money to build hot houses and glass houses to raise, I think, tomatoes at that time, to make it to make money from the land that they had, and the skills that they knew how to do that. So what happened was my dad was drinking, and he when my mom was 6 months pregnant with me, there was an accident on the road. He was on a horse cart. He was a farmer, so there was a motorcycle accident, and he was arrested and put in jail right when, in the middle of the pregnancy with me. Mm-hmm. My mom was left with an entire farm with, I think, 4 or 5 children growing up. They were small children, and a bunch of animals and cows and, you know, land, and it was summer. So there was harvest time, and she was 6 months pregnant. And I actually sat down for the first time ever, and I actually have her memoir that I encouraged her to write before she died, 3 months before her death. She wrote the story of her life, and each birth of each child is documented in that memoir. I dug it up today, thanks to this commitment to speak tonight, and out of genuine curiosity, read the places which gave me a background of where my mother came from, the kind of parents she had and the upbringing, and then what happened around my birth, because I was very curious about the kind of climate, you know, emotional climate. I knew my parents were, you know, my father was an alcoholic, but what really was happening in the background just when I was conceived. It literally, a few days before I was conceived, I kind of backtracked. Her best friend, her sister, died. And so I don't think she ever recovered from that. So I was conceived and born into a climate of grief that I always felt sad about. Ever since I can remember, I was very sad about something, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And I have a feeling that was my mother's grief that I absorbed in the womb and then carried on, because she was really never happy. She wasn't really genuinely joyful or happy about anything. There was so much grief in the family, and plus the alcoholism. That was multiplied by, I had 3 sisters and 3 brothers, and 1 little sister didn't make it. She was only 3 months old in the 1950s. And I think died of some health complications really early on. So there were actually 7 of us. And I witnessed, it was just really weird to grow up in a family that fought all the time about money and alcohol and couldn't get it together, even though my parents settled in this village outside of a big city in Poland, and they were given, because of their degrees in agriculture, they were actually awarded by the state the largest piece of land. So they were land wealthy. They were the wealthiest people, but they died the poorest. And it broke my heart the way they destroyed their life, and their children emulated that. Even to this day, I have been emulating that same pattern. Running out of food a week before I was paid, got a paycheck. And it just didn't make any sense to me. You know, I was in America for 30 years. I was still doing the same thing. And I had no idea how or why and how I could actually get out of that until I crossed the doorstep of ACA. And that was last year in the summer, when I literally had no idea how I was going to survive. I ran out of everything. And I said, okay, by this weekend, God, if nothing changes, I just don't want to be around. And, you know, all I had was this recurring thought of, like, for me, it was natural. It's like, okay, if I can't pay my bills, then I'm just going to kill myself. That was, to me, that was this normal sort of way of dealing with problems, life's problems. Like, I had no other skill to come up with an idea that was actually productive or could fix it, you know. And I was watching this program on brain development, and at that time when I said, okay, just a few more days and I'm out of here, and it said the first 10 years of your life, your brain is forming and it's absorbing everything from your environment. And that's pretty much all you get for the rest of your life. And it just, light bulb came up in my head when it occurred to me that I looked at the 10 years of my life, and it honestly, for the very first time in my life, I realized that I grew up in an alcoholic family. Like, it really didn't sink in for 52 years. It was astonishing. I mean, it was just amazing to me that how could I miss that? Yet, physically, I changed continents to get away from it. 30 years later, earlier, I moved away from Poland to be away from that insanity. And yet, for 30 years, I suffered. I continued the same routine that I'd learned as a child until the summer a year ago. And when I saw that program on brain development, it occurred to me that a couple of occasions when I was trying to save my failing marriage, also to an alcoholic, some years ago, the therapist suggested if I shouldn't go to an ACA meeting. And I couldn't find a meeting at that time. And then something else happened and I couldn't find the meeting. And somehow I wasn't ready, even though I was looking. I came here looking for a meeting one time and I couldn't find the door. And just walked away. It was amazing for me that it was just how much, you know, how many years it took of wandering around in my life aimlessly, living without a particular set of tools and skills that would help me deal with life's problems, including relationships. None of my relationships have worked. None. Whether they were work relationships, friendships, or close relationships. They all failed. I did not know how to do relationships. And I didn't know how to do money either. I mean, I ran away from money because I knew that when I was growing up, what I witnessed was people fighting about money so they could get drunk. I witnessed my brothers fighting physically, beating each other up, blood flowing, teeth falling out, you know, bones breaking, and my parents trying to get them apart, and my father, you know, calling my mother awful names when I was very little. And that was my picture of what my future might look like, because I had no other ideas of, you know, I didn't know that people actually could care for each other and love each other. I didn't know such people. So what happened was, I actually brought a picture that my mother sent me. This is 1966, so I was 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And I've been really looking at this picture recently. I have this picture on above my fireplace and wherever I stand in the kitchen to remind me of who I am, who I used to be but never really became until I came to ACA. And truly, I'm only about a year and a half old right now. Seriously, that's how I feel. It's like the you know, somebody said, another fellow traveler in recovery said, this is, you haven't heard about the terrible twos. This is what happens. You know? we are, you know, and what happened actually, speaking of terrible twos, I, having grown up in a communist country, and all I saw was resistance, you know, how to resist the enemies, you know, whether Russians or authority or parents. And what happened was I would become a rebel. So not only a lost child, but a rebel at the same time. And I, few months ago, I stopped coming to the meetings. I stopped doing recovery. And I thought, there was not much thinking at that time. You stop thinking, basically, because, you know, whatever the reasoning was going in my head didn't make sense at all. I mean, here I was, you know, humming right along, coming to meetings, reading, and being in touch with everybody, and kind of life got really nice and comfortable and smooth. Things started to work out, and then I stopped, and then life changed, and it got harder and harder. I started isolating. I stopped attending meetings, but also just stopped participating actively in my recovery. And I noticed a difference. I really noticed the difference that what I would say is I got away from the higher power. And I stopped caring for my little child in a way that I started to care as a parent would, a loving parent would. And I got very distracted with, you know, socializing, and I picked a new career path about 2 months ago, and I got very excited. And again, there's the excitement that really derailed me from my recovery, being fully committed and present to what is actually necessary a day at a time, to be totally present in my life like an adult would be. And I just, you know, this, I was talking to George, and I was, you know, she was asking if I would be a host, if you would like to host this meeting. And I thought, okay, I need to go for it, because if I don't commit to something bigger than my own suffering and my own stupidity, I won't make it. It's going to be all going to waste. I've gotten very far, I mean, you know, to a place which was promising. You know, it felt like I actually started to get a nice grip on life that I never had. I never had my life together. And I was getting inspired. You know, I started to look at my future rather than just dwell on the past and trying to kill myself, you know. And what I realized is that forget about hosting. I need to speak, because I have no idea what I'm going to speak about, but I'm going to speak. Mm-hmm. And from that moment, thank you for accepting my offer, because from that moment, something really magical happened. It was like I turned the corner. Like, I really got serious about my recovery. It wasn't just testing it anymore. It was really living it. And it wasn't about being fake or looking good or just showing up, like, you know, whenever I feel like. This, I didn't really write the speech. The speech was writing itself from the moment I stepped into this commitment. And the most amazing things have come through during this last 2 or 3 weeks. I really stopped. I think one of the things that really happened for me was that I stopped, you know, like believing the lies I was telling myself. Oh, it's working, it's okay, you know, it's just fine, I'll just go to meeting whenever. No, I can't do this. I can't afford not to be in recovery. I cannot, it's too costly to be living the old way. And life is too precious. I mean, I've lost all my three brothers who have been alcoholics since early age. I saw them all emulate the father's dysfunction and alcoholism. One died 3 years ago. He was 59. The youngest brother died at 59. Total degenerate in Poland. No life whatsoever. He was begging on the street. His health was completely destroyed by alcohol. Second brother died a month after I stepped through the ACA's door last summer, and he was only 65. He stopped drinking 25 years ago and became he joined AA and remained sober. However, I believe that his body was so damaged by alcohol that, and ravaged by it, that he couldn't make it. It was destroyed. And he fell into a coma, and a month later he was gone. The third brother died this April. He was, I think, 69. So I had a blow of death in the family and a really good reminder of what dysfunction and this disease can do to people. And if that wasn't enough, I don't know what would be. Even though I'm far removed from the family, I chose not to be in touch with anybody over the years. I've remained isolated by choice, and my family is as crazy as ever, as they ever were. But so, what happened was, just a backup for into my childhood. There was a moment when I was 7 years old. My mother, I witnessed two policemen, civilians, come up to the house one April morning and take my mother away. They searched the house a little bit. I had no idea what was going on at the time, but they took her, and she ended up in prison for 15 months. I was 7 years old, left with an alcoholic father, and I was taken into care by my 27-year-old alcoholic sister, who proceeded to drink every day. She lived right where I grew up, next door, and had a little studio apartment. And proceeded, I've witnessed, you know, I was sleeping with her on the same bed. She had sex on the same bed, would drink to excess. There was just no moment when there was a sane time or behavior ever, anywhere. And then I witnessed my brothers drink, destroyed doors, furniture, anything, just to get money for vodka. And I was exhausted. At 7 years old, I was absolutely exhausted with life, because not only I witnessed my father drinking and abusing my mom, but I also witnessed, it was like one brother, second brother, third brother, and then my sister. And then the other two sisters, even though they were quite educated, they repeated the same patterns in their own families. So I didn't want to have children, and I didn't want to get married. by the time I was 20 years old, I just didn't want to have anything to do with any of that. So I decided to come to America. You know, my sister immigrated in 1980, and she invited me, so I came here. I had one job after another job after another job. I couldn't hold a job no matter what. I tried everything. I would just get bored with things or purposefully fail. Like, it really was this weird thing of get fired or leave on my own accord. You know, it wasn't, there was no longevity in any of it. No work relationship was actually working out so I could make good money, have education, have a future, you know, and have money saved up for my retirement. None of it. So here I am in ACA and learning to live in a very different way. Learning to live, you know, I would never suspect that a recovery program could actually deliver life skills to me, that could deliver people that care about me genuinely, that want to sit in a room like this and listen to my story. Like, I did not believe that could happen. I spent thousands of dollars on seminars, on books, on therapies, you know, I mean, you name it. I was there, learning to save my life. None of it worked to the degree that this program does. And the only thing that has to work for me is my commitment to showing up here. My commitment to showing in these meetings and not isolating and not doing it alone. So when my mom came back from prison, I was 8 years old. I had no idea. I was so estranged. I had no idea how to relate to her. I didn't want to relate to her, and I didn't want to relate to my family anymore. And I think at that point, I just decided to just, it doesn't matter, whatever I do, whatever, you know, it's like there was this ongoing theme in my mind, why bother? You know, it's not going to work out anyway. So why bother? You know, and then I never felt wanted. I never felt like my dad actually ended up being in prison through my birth and didn't come out until February. I was born in early December. So half of the pregnancy through the birth, my dad wasn't even there. And my mom was so overworked. There was like, everybody was surprised she showed up back from hospital with a baby. And I found out that she was hiding the pregnancy. Mm. Like, all the kids were surprised. It's like, where did this baby come from? You know? And so this whole, all these years, I've been just sort of feeling that way. Like, I wasn't welcomed. I wasn't wanted very much, and I wasn't very safe. I never felt safe. And until I came to ACA, until I heard other people's stories. And so suddenly my life wasn't that bad. You know, suddenly there was hope. And I'm very grateful. I have a new relationship with God, whom I call higher power. And if I can only remember every day to pray for help and ask for support and do my serenity prayer. If I can do that, then the day unfolds in a very different way. I notice it's palpable. The peace that I get just from saying the serenity prayer is absolutely unfathomable. It's unshakable. Like, nothing else does it for me. And from that connection, if I can just keep that at the center of my being and of my day, then everything else falls into place. And it's easier to do everything else. Suddenly, all these insurmountable problems become smaller and manageable. I was attending this event with Ira Glass, who is the NPR journalist, and he was saying that we live in a time when people don't listen to each other. And I thought of it, and, you know, I see from the perspective of ACA that when I come to meetings, people do listen to each other. This is a very different world that we have a a fortunate blessing to be in, to be participating in this sort of reality within a reality that's absolutely insane out there. But we have this safe haven of people who actually listen to us. What a gift. And I'm very grateful for that, because I don't get it anywhere else, believe me. It's very, no one does it like we do here. I noticed that it's also very nurturing for me to be around fellow travelers. Whether it's this program or any other program, I feel nurtured by their presence. I feel received. I feel acknowledged. And I feel safe, like nowhere else. I want to thank my little child. It's a Thanksgiving weekend, and I wanted to thank, obviously, Higher Power, who is my true parent, but the next person in line is my little child. The child that I was thinking about this so much. I mean, the speech was 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks long, you know. And it's just the stuff that has gone through my head is unbelievable. And of course, I couldn't grab it all. But what I remember was, I have become a master at neglect. This life that I have been living, based on my upbringing, which was largely dysfunctional, I have mastered the art of neglect, of neglecting myself, of neglecting my needs, of neglecting my little child, and neglecting my connection to God. I didn't know who God was, even though I was a member of many spiritual, whatever it was. You know, this is where I found God. This is the only place that I found a true connection to God. And no one told me what that is. I had to find it for myself. So I'm grateful for my little child, because when I look at this picture every day, it guides me. It guides me to the choices that are much healthier than my parents showed me. It guides me to be gentle to myself. It guides me to forgive myself for the mistakes that I've made. I have made a lot of mistakes in this life, and I have been very harsh with myself and other people as well. But this little kid is reminding me to forget all about it. Just keep living, and one day at a time, just move one foot in front of the other. Just slow down and love this kid. This is my job, is to learn to love this kid like it has never been loved before. And I want to thank my parents. I took some time this afternoon and took my mother's handwritten, I have the original, journal that she wrote at 3 months before she died. And it was amazing how much suffering these people have gone through, how much hardship they have endured. And I just want to thank them for that, for bringing me to this world, and for doing their best. For doing their best given the circumstances and what they have gotten from their parents. Really am grateful for that. And the last and not least, I want to thank the ACA Fellowship, because this is, you know, I was like cringing when George was saying, well, hello family. I'm like, what? And now I get it. It's like, you know, who would do this? Saturday night, you have million other things you could be doing, yet you're here for something, and I am here for something. And what we get out of being together and talking about recovery and supporting each other is very special. There is no conversation like this out there anywhere. So I'm grateful for that, because without you, I wouldn't be here. There wouldn't be point of me to coming to these meetings. So this, you know, it isn't about me, it's about you. And I had to understand this in the last 3 weeks. I had to go through this whole process. It was like going through the washing machine, you know, with this enormous laundry list, going through cycles, you know. There were just these cycles, and I was like hearing things just go through my, you know, through my head, one way, the other way, and it was wow, this is cool. Okay, another one and another one, and it's like the higher power is feeding me this enormous amount of recovery. Just because I stepped up and said, I'm going to speak about whatever. I had no idea what I'm going to speak about tonight, honestly. I couldn't even sit down and write the speech down. I couldn't. There's so much to cover. It's impossible to write it down. So I just said, okay, higher power, I trust you know what you're going to talk about, because I have no idea. And so here we are, and you have listened. Which is a proof that ACA works. It really works. And I forget that it does. I forget every day. You know, the old pulls me in, the old stuff, the insanity. You know, I like to be late. That's my way of getting excited. I always wait till the last minute, and I finally figured it out. I had no idea for 50 years. I was always late. Had people waiting for me, being pissed off, you know. Something, there was some pleasure of pissing people off. And yet, I figured that whenever I was late, I would get excited. I would get fearful, and then worried. And that led to the downward spiral of beating on myself and feeling awful about myself. And I would perpetuate that every single day. But funny enough, when I started coming to ACA, I would come on time. And it caught my attention. It was different. This was something very different, that I didn't need to reenact the old stuff. And something else showed up. You know, something, because it became important to me. Something in me became important. It was the little child. And even now, when I'm late, at least I know why. And I can sort of take a back seat and observe myself, go through the motions of the insanity, and yet not judge myself for it. And that's my way of healing and changing that, becoming aware of it. So thank you for being here tonight, even though it's a Thanksgiving weekend. And I'm sure there's other things. See, this is another thing that I've done all my life. It's like, I'm not worth it. Why are you even here? But yet I'm understanding I am worth it. I'm beginning to be worth it for me. For me to even stand in front of one person, it was unheard of before I came to ACA. Even before, I mean, it took some time for me to even get acquainted with some kind of worth that was worth showing up for. And maybe the relapse that I experienced just recently, in the last 2 or 3 months, has taught me that there's something tugging inside. It's tugging on me that if I get off track, it wants me to come back to the center and keep going with recovery. Because if I don't, it's going to drive me nuts. It's going to sabotage me. It will destroy me. And like it has done before. So As I stand before you, I really want to say I declare myself as worthy and of your presence and of your listening. Because in your listening, I get to be received and get to be loved without judgment and without any kind of expectation or... You know, my family is really great at expectations. I could never fulfill them, no matter what. And you don't have any. It's like you just show up and receive whatever comes to you. And it's beautiful. I was like, am I nervous before this evening? And I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to say, and yet I had to trust that the higher power knows. And that trusting is my healing in ACA. It's the sign of my healing and my recovery. That I know that if I can only let higher power speak through me and work through me, I'll be okay. I really will be okay. Because what I have done has not worked. So my job is to trust the higher power, that it knows what it's doing. Thank you.